calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
You're on Larry. Larry.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Happy New Year! Happy New Year! And well, now what? The holidays are over. Whether you spent them in an orgy with the full bench from Victoria's Secret, or alone in the fetal position in a dark corner with a razor at your wrist, the happiest time of year is already so far in your rearview mirror, it might just be a speck of dust. Really, this time of year can be far more trying than the Christmas holidays. Those emotional hurdles to get over at Christmas, those dashed expectations, maybe visiting relatives that get on your nerves within the first 20 minutes of their arrival, but somehow you gutted it out. You got through it. Congratulations. Maybe you managed to get a refund on that puke-inducing sweater somebody gave you from Abercrombie or Hollister. Maybe you even got cash back from some regifted shit, which does seem to be on the ascendance, doesn't it? You open the box and go, come on, Panini grills or so 3 years ago. And it's obvious it's not in the original interior packing, right? The power cord is just swishing around and they're loose. There's no sign of that little 4-inch length of vinyl-coated wire that keeps that cord so nice and neatly looped. Last year, Episode 3, Secrets to Your Best Year Ever, was a concise and most of all doable recipe for getting yourself in shape, physically and emotionally and more. A lot of people still reference it, so check it out at thatlarryshow.com and click the January Archive button. This year, I'm going to assume you're combat ready, but address another bungee pit everyone faces, no matter their physical condition. Look at the calendar. Go ahead. What do you see? The Gobi goddamn desert of nothingness. Nothing in those big blank boxes but dates. See any holidays? Well, none really worth a shit until Monday, May 28, Memorial Day, when they switch summer back on. Isn't that what we live for? To peel off the goddamn long johns and mucklucks and earmuffs and squish our bare toes in that wet sand and immerse ourselves in the tactile and olfactory banquet that is summertime. But it's so damn far off. For the last 8 weeks, there's been a shitpile of fun distractions. Halloween, Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas, Boxing Day, and New Year's, and now we face the holiday wasteland. Oh, sure, there's President's Day, but what the hell are you going to do with that? Go out and celebrate that big array of windbags, phonies, whoremasters, felons, and assholes, with very few exceptions? There's Feb 14, Valentine's Day. That's okay for some people. Female people. Valentine's Day is a total chick holiday. In fact, it's number one on the list of what I term hostage holidays. What are those? Holidays where you damn well better acknowledge and gift. Because if you do not, she's going to make you suffer. Other hostage holidays would be spousal birthdays, anniversaries, Christmas. Now, what does that leave us to look forward to over the next 6 months? 6 months of purgatory, maybe even hell, if you hate your job. We get a minor respite with St. Paddy's Day. Not a day off from work, but at least a blank check to drink to excess and act like a maniac. Whether you're Irish or not, God bless those Irish. Talk about inclusive, huh? So what you've got to do, especially if you live where winter is oppressively cold, is make your own reprieve. In more temperate climates, not such a big deal. You don't spend weeks on end without seeing the sun and have to huddle and hurry from heated conveyance to heated building to heated blankets. In New York, Winter sucks, especially after Christmas. It's like this big bait-and-switch conspiracy. They take a bleak, monochromatic metropolis and paint it with twinkle lights and ornaments. And for a while there, at least after dark, it looks pretty fantastic. Then, the moment the Christmas sales are over, they wave a reverse magic wand over everything, and it reverts back to the empire of gloom it has always been. Over the next 2 months is when people with deeper pockets get out of the Arctic freeze and head to the Caribbean and warm up. When I lived in New York, that wasn't so much an option. So instead, my pals and I would face the beast head-on and actually forge even deeper into hostile climate with ski weekends. I must have been out of my fucking mind, but that's usually what I think when I screw my eye sockets into my retrospectroscope. What was I thinking? But still, it was a sojourn away from the grime and concrete and danger of New York City. And the ski areas are beautiful. Now, when I say my pals, there was a fairly standard group of reprobates with whom I would take these trips. The main ones were Vic and Bobby. Kind of regular guys, but on this particular weekend, there was a wild card, Monty. He was Bobby's cousin. Bobby had gotten the flu and would have had to forfeit the money, so Monty took his place and paid Bobby, no doubt. And Monty was a bit odd. So on these things, we'd hit the slopes on the cheap. There was a travel outfit that would arrange these, quote, all-inclusive, unquote, ski weekends for a ridiculously low price. I mean, it was almost cheaper to go skiing than it was to stay home. I have no idea how they did it. Wait, yes I do. That's sort of what this episode is about. Once you paid your money, the only thing you needed really was yourself. Transportation, all meals, lodging, boots, skis, poles, and lift tickets, all included. But I suppose I should backtrack a smidge and have a look at the words, all-inclusive, because that means some things are going to be subpar and not even close to code. The only question is, what parts of the trip? Will you have to ride shotgun on a garbage truck? Will the food give you the shits? Will you return home with bedbugs or lice? Will the skis fall off your feet? Do you get what you pay for? Fuck yeah. And less. Friday evening, we pleasure seekers would meet a motor coach somewhere in the fashionable borough of Queens. Don't you love the euphemisms of commerce? A bus just sounds so low rent and smelly and shitty, but a motor coach, hell, that's what rock stars tour in, isn't it? Every industry has its own smokescreen verbiage, and travel is no different. It's never a motel, it's lodging. And if it says quaint, you've probably got to share a toilet. Sure, we wanted to get out of Dodge and break the back of the season without hope, but there was a bigger motivation. Skiing and boarding are probably one of the best ways to meet chicks. You might share a chairlift with one. You'll definitely be standing in line with plenty. You might crash into one on the slopes, and the après-ski bar will surely be packed with them. More importantly, the caliber of chicks you meet will likely be superior, because skiing and boarding take some level of athleticism. So that weeds out the junkies and crackheads. Even doing it on the cheap still costs money, and that cuts down on indigent seekers of meal tickets. We'd already meet a full spectrum of babage on the ride from New York up to the mountains. And that could be even better than the slopes, because ski outfits can camouflage a lack of pointiness, whereas on the long ride, they dressed en mufti. By the way, if you're a new listener and want to find out what pointiness means, check out just the previous episode to this, New Year's with a Mob. I'll tell you all about it. It's a funny thing about bus trips. People tend to behave themselves on planes and trains, but what is it about bus trips that trigger age regression? especially the guys. And of course, it's contagious. Once guys start acting nutty, the females tend to get with the program. And fueling the fires of wanton madness was many bottles and flasks of assorted spirits. At that time, my choice was this stuff called Yukon Jack. Apropos considering the weather and geography, it's 100-proof sipping booze. They call it the black sheep of Canadian whiskey. In a stomach-turning act of nanny statism, I understand the Canadian government will only allow an 80-proof version of this stuff. What the fuck is that about? If any Canadian listeners can illuminate that travesty for me, please drop me a line at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. Now, Yukon Jack, though not some sublime single malt or designer bourbon, was the perfect refreshment for these icy excursions. The label alone was an irresistible seduction to any adventure-seeking young male. A fantastic image of some bold brigand, and a huge coat standing in the moonlight in the frozen north. And the text, it was perfection. It was a selection from my favorite poet of all time, the inimitable Robert Service. Here is that stanza. I have clinched and closed with the naked north. I have learned to defy and defend. Shoulder to shoulder, we have fought it out. Yet the wild must win in the end. Is that not perfection? Couple that pithy passage with the challenge of black diamond slopes and young, firm vixens in search of thrills and male companionship, and you might have a paradise potential. The Yukon Jack ad went further to describe the drink thusly. They called it soft-spoken and smooth. Its 100-proof potency simmers just below the surface. Straight or on the rocks or mixed, Yukon Jack is a breed apart, unlike any Canadian liquor you've ever tasted. Can you see some Don Draper hunched over his IBM Selectric tapping out that brilliance? Read any advertising copy like that lately? No. Madison Avenue is as creatively bankrupt as Hollywood. Some time ago, I took a vacation in the Yukon and spent an afternoon at the very cabin where Robert Service wrote that magnificent poem. But that's for another show. So we board the bus at dusk and stake out our seats. The best ones were toward the rear of the motor coach, but not so far back as to be over the rear wheels or next to the can. After a five-hour drive with Boku imbibing, you don't want to be too close to those. Plus, sitting farther back gave you a better view of everyone in front, and you could fully check them out as they walked the aisle. And Yukon Jack wasn't the only social lubricant aboard that bus. Most people had their own elixirs, and within an hour, a raucous party was in full swing. And all sorts of characters would emerge. There was Trumpet Steve, thus called because he never said a single word. He would simply do famous trumpet phrases with his mouth and answer yes or no with one short blast for yes and two for no. It was funny as hell and made him a total chick magnet. They swarmed him, demanding to know if he could speak or if it was all a put-on. He'd answer not a word, but instead launch into, I don't know, My Funny Valentine or some other horn classic. Soon, the PA system was seized from the bus driver, and it was a cappella belting or joke-telling or impressions or stories or X-rated charades. Damn near everybody got up and did some shtick. But through it all, Monty the wild card, he remained eerily silent and disengaged. Kind of a mope, as they say in the Bronx. I asked Vic if he knew what Monty's problem was, but he had no idea. We speculated it may have been Monty's voice. He rarely did speak, but when he did, it had an odd pitch and tone. Kind of like this. Then somebody decided that all females should be in the overhead luggage compartments. Every man on that bus, except for Monty, pitched in, and soon we had nearly every girl stowed away in the overhead rack. There were two or three still below, and they actually asked if we would put them above when there was room. The girls on these trips were just like us. They were not from Park Avenue duplexes. They were mostly from Bay Ridge or Bensonhurst or Maspeth or Sunnyside. They were pretty street smart. They were grounded. What they had, they worked for. And they were mostly fun, a lot of fun. They didn't get triggered or offended. They gave as good as they got, often better. If some guy pissed them off or went too far, they had no qualms about telling him to fuck off or maybe even punching him in the face. I have to wonder what those bus trips are like today in our fucked and infantilized society. Does everyone sit there with their hands folded or swiping Tinder, earbuds sealing them off from real-time intersexual interface? Does the bus company forbid alcohol? Or do they segregate the sexes to eliminate harassment claims? By the way, we never say gender on this fucking show, and we never will. If they don't prohibit drinking, do they check IDs? Do they have a goddamn booze cop on board to limit everyone to two drinks? Do they only allow sissified 80-proof Yukon Jack, if at all? So by the time we hit our destination, everyone was well-oiled and good friends and raging for more. On this particular trip, we were bound for a place called Whiteface Mountain in the Adirondacks of upstate New York. Whiteface is at Lake Placid, scene of the 1980 Winter Olympics. The bus came to a halt, the door opened, and on gets a park ranger with his smoky bear hat and his face completely covered like the Invisible Man. I expected he'd be the object of 100 insults, but he was so odd-looking and utterly unexpected. Nobody said a word. The driver handed him the mic.
"Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Whiteface Mountain. I usually don't board arriving buses."
"It's not a bus, it's a fucking motor coach." Holy shit, it was Trumpet Steve. He could speak. Everybody went wild. The guy was a master con artist and a wise ass. We loved him even more. The ranger just waited until the hubbub subsided, and he began anew.
"I usually don't board arriving buses, but I've been doing so this evening due to the somewhat extreme weather conditions. The raw temperature outside this nicely heated vehicle is 38 degrees below zero. Not below freezing, below zero. That means any exposed skin, cheeks, nose, fingers, will develop frostbite within minutes. At the top of the mountain, where I assume some of you will descend from tomorrow, the temperature with wind chill is 85 degrees below zero. At that temperature, you can get dead real quick. So keep warm, be careful, and do not ski alone."
The median blood alcohol level on that bus was doubtless at rehab-worthy levels. But despite this, utter silence reigned after the ranger's talk. He got through to everyone with his simple message. This kind of cold can kill you. So we debarked the motor coach as Trumpet Steve mouth played, "Baby, it's cold outside." We gathered our gear from beneath the budge and trudged uphill to our accommodations, which were provided by the Sitting Bull Lodge. It was well after midnight. Some guy shouted, "Hey, when I spit, it bounces." Suddenly, everyone was hocking loogies like patients in a TB clinic. And sure as hell, a big one would hit the ground and freeze on contact. Smaller ones and sprays would freeze in midair and tinkle as they hit the ice underfoot. Holy shit, that's cold. The Sitting Bull Lodge or as it soon came to be known, the Sit and Bullshit Lodge, was built near a big lake and was comprised of several structures. The largest was a three-story cinder block motel, and it looked kind of new and substantial. Then there was a sort of a log cabin dining hall and game room. When the desk clerk gave us our keys, he directed us to lakeside cabins. There were about a dozen, and they were indeed lakeside. As we walked to them, the wind screamed across that lake, and I recall thinking, the ranger was wrong. It's got to be 85 below right here. We went inside the cabin, and it was incredibly basic, or, in travel bullshit parlance, rustic. We were tired. We'd been drinking plenty, and so we didn't take much note of anything and were soon asleep. I'm not sure how much later it was, but I awakened first. I felt worse than I had ever felt in my life. I knew it wasn't the Yukon Jack. I'd had a good helping, but certainly not enough to feel the way I did, which was hard to describe. It was a little bit like that achy flu feeling, but much worse. I went into the bathroom to take a leak. As I peed, I felt my ankles and feet getting sprayed, and I thought my aim was off. Then I looked closer. The water in the toilet was frozen solid, and my piss was bouncing off it and spraying me. I also then noticed I was trembling. I didn't realize it at the time, but it was the beginnings of hypothermia. I went back in the main room, and by then, my friends were also awake. They said they felt equally shitty. We noticed every exhale produced a huge plume of vapor. We looked around and realized this was a summer cabin. The walls and ceiling were planks. The exterior walls were also the interior walls, zero insulation. I looked for a radiator. There was a small electric baseboard heater. I felt it. It was barely warm and totally inadequate. My friend Vic spat on the wood floor. It bounced. The all-inclusive lodging meant a fucking cabin, never designed for anything more chilly than a warm summer night. If we slept here, we'd be dead in the morning, just like the little match girl. To hear about her, check episode 57. I was shivering so bad I could barely speak. My friend Vic grabbed the phone and called the front desk. Instead of demanding a room in the main structure, he complained about the lack of heat in the cabin. Not smart. The desk wonk said he'd have someone from engineering come down and have a look. That's another bullshit term in the travel business. Janitors and handymen in hotels or motels are referred to as engineers. But we're all like 22 or 23 years old, and what the hell do we know? I'm sitting there wrapped in a thin blanket, half expecting some guy in a white lab coat like some NASA dude. After a while, there's a knock at the door, and in walks this guy who looks like one of the McKenzie brothers. He's carrying a little toolbox, and he kneels down in front of that baseboard and taps it a couple times with a crescent wrench like he's cracking a boiled egg. I realize he has no idea what the fuck he's doing. Vic says, "So what's the problem?" And he answers,
"It's not working."
Then he says he has to go back to his workshop for parts, and we know that's bullshit too. Now Monty hasn't said a thing, but he's been walking around in small circles. I figure he's trying to keep warm and ask him if he's okay. I get no answer. We all look at each other for a while. Vic goes into the toilet to pee and uses the sink. At least there wouldn't be a spray back. Then I got fully dressed. Ski overalls, jacket, gloves, everything but the goggles. I walked to the door and stepped outside. It was science fiction. Across the lake was flat ice and outer space above. The wind would blow snow over the ice, and sometimes it almost looked like waves at the beach. Above and up the road to the right was salvation, a building actually designed to sustain life in winter. I went back inside the cabin. There was no difference in temperature, just a lack of wind. We had to get to that motel above. Monty stopped circling. His eyes were bulging. The cords stood out on his neck. I was just about to reach for the phone when Monty snatched it first.
Hey, this is cabin number 4. We want a room in the main building, now! Patient? Fuck patient! I want a room in that motel, or I'll burn this fucking shack to the ground!
Holy shit. Vic and I looked at each other. Monty speaks, and he's a maniac, and now we're totally fucked. We're in Siberia, and Psycho Monty has just declared himself an arsonist to the only possible salvation we've got. Now I'm seriously pissed off. Hey, Monty, you fucking moron. You think we're going to get a room up there now? He's walking in circles again. No answer. Vic is shaking his head in agreement when I flash in an idea. We'll walk up to the motel, try to get a room, and tell them Monty's just a drunken asshole. Maybe grease the clerk with 50 or 100 bucks. That might work. As I'm formulating this plan, I see Monty kneeling in the corner, tearing the phone book into pieces. He then pulls a lighter from his pocket and sparks it.
You guys think I'm kidding? I'm not fucking kidding!
Vic is over there instantly, stamping out Monty's indoor campfire. And then... is that the cops? Can't be the front desk. Not after Monty's call. Who the fuck is it? Did Monty burn the shack down? Did we wind up in jail? In a hospital with hypothermia? Find out later this week when it gets even weirder with part 2 of this episode. To hear it, go to patreon.com/thatlarryshow. See you then, everybody. Stay warm.